Welcome to week number 10 of our verse-by-verse journey through all of God's inspired Word. We pick up our story today in Genesis chapter 26, verse number 12. My guess is that Isaac is somewhere in the last quarter of his first century of life. He's going to live on to be about 180, I think it is. And he is now past that time where his dad was alive and in his life. Abraham has passed away, and Yitzhak, or Isaac, is now the head of this very wealthy tent city that moves around as part of their Bedouin lifestyle. And they ran into a problem of a famine, a drought, which caused the water table to drop and which drove Yitzhak down toward the Mediterranean coast near the city of Gerar, as there the water table is still going to be sufficiently high to provide the water for these animals. Now, while he was there, he did the exact same thing that his dad did when he was in this same region and pretended that his wife, Rebecca, was his sister, until the king of the land, the title is Abimelech, he sees some very intimate touching going on between the couple, and he realizes, oh no, this could have ended up very badly. And he calls Yitzhak on the carpet and chews him out, and then tells him that you need to go somewhere else upstream and do your work. So Yitzhak does set up somewhere nearby some grain growing projects for that particular year. And this is what we read. Yitzhak sowed in the land and reaped in the same year 100-fold. Now that's amazing, especially in a time when there is a drought going on, that you get, for every bushel of grain you put into the field, you get 100 bushels of reaped grain, processed grain. And so this would have been a clear indication to everybody nearby that Yitzhak is in a special category to himself. He is blessed by the divine being that he serves, by God who sees him and all the others in his community. We read in Moses' writings here that he who is blessed him. The man became rich and he gained more and more until he became very wealthy. And he had possessions of flocks and herds and many servants, so that the Philistines envied him. Now this is an anachronistic use of the term Philistines. Moses is writing this document several hundred years after the events, and in his day, this territory that we're talking about, which is down near Gaza City today, that was the land of the first wave of the Philistines, and was known as Philistia. So he's just putting his time period's name on the people living in the same exact area, because these guys are more than likely Hittites or Amorites. So the Philistines are like very envious of how well things are doing for Yitzhak. And as is way too often the case, when a person becomes envious, they will sometimes do something to try to take that person they envy down a notch or two. And that's what these guys do. Verse 15. Now the Philistines had stopped and filled with earth all the wells that his father's servants had dug in the days of Abraham his father. And you remember that Abraham is long dead now, probably several decades gone from the scene. And so Yitzhak is his own man. But in his movements around, he's left behind the places that Abraham cultivated as his little tent city sites, where he dug wells. And so the Philistines are just filling all that stuff in. When they see an open well, they fill it in. Perhaps in part to keep Yitzhak from utilizing it. Because we're about to see some contention about wells. So Abimelech said to Yitzhak, "Go away from us, for you are much mightier than I." So this is where he tells him, you need to go away from the area of the city of Gerar. You can still stay in my territory, and his territory is the drainage basin of this river that dumps into the Mediterranean Sea right there by what we call Gaza City today. One of the upper reaches of this drainage basin is right next to the modern-day community of Beersheba. And it was, in the days of Abraham, a tent community next to a well that Abraham had dug, and which Abimelech and his commander of his military forces, Phicol, had agreed that it was the possession of Abraham, since he had dug that well there. Now, we're about to come back to Beersheba after many years absence from there in just a moment. So Yitzhak departed from there, that is from Gerar city, and he encamped in the valley of Gerar and settled there. So he starts going back up the water system, heading back upstream. Probably the famine, the drought is now broken. Yitzhak dug again the wells of water that had been dug in the days of Abraham his father, which the Philistines had stopped after the death of Abraham, and he gave them the names that his father had given them. So he is aware, because he worked with his dad, that these wells that he's having to undig were to dig out after they'd been stopped up, that these were his dad's original handiwork. And he remembers what some of the names of them were. But he's also coming across some other places that he's having to dig water wells. When Yitzhak's servants dug in the valley and found there a well of spring of water, the herdsmen of Gerar quarreled with Yitzhak's herdsmen, saying, "That water is ours." So he called the name of the well Esek, because they contended with him. So regarding this particular well, he says it's contention. And so he abandons it rather than fight with Abimelech's countrymen. Verse 21, so they dug another well, and they quarreled over that also, so he called its name Sitma, which has to do with strife or fighting. And then he moved on from there, and he dug another well, and they did not quarrel over it. He named its name, or called its name, Rehoboth, saying, "For now, he who is has made room for us, and we shall be fruitful in the land." Rehoboth has the idea of space, an open area. So that's why he gives this particular well that name. And so this is one of the places then that he's far enough away from Gerar city, far enough up the water table, up the water system, that he's not running into the contention with the Gerarites. And then from Rehoboth, he goes a little farther upstream. It says here, from there he went up to Beersheba. So he goes to the same place where Abraham had had his tent community at once, at one time, and where Abraham had entered into an agreement that the well he dug here belonged to him because he's the one that put all the work into it. That's how it gets its name, Beersheba, which was the well of the oath or the well of the seven, because Abraham gave seven lambs, female lambs, to Abimelech as proof. This is my handiwork when I built this well, when I dug this well. So he's now come back to a place that has not had a tent community there for quite some time, evidently. It is not yet a full-fledged city. And he then is met there by God. This is verse 24 of chapter 26. He who is appeared to him that same night and said, I am the God of Abraham, your father. Fear not, for I am with you and will bless you and multiply your offspring for my servant Abraham's sake. So God now appears to the son of the promise, Yitzhak, and tells him, you are now my man. You are the one that I'm going to put my blessing and put my covenant upon, and I will keep my promises through you. And so what does Yitzhak do? He responds appropriately. Verse 25, he built an altar there, and he called upon the name of he who is, and pitched his tent there. And there Yitzhak's servants dug a well. So he considers this to be God's way of saying, you are in the right spot. Settle down here. Make this your place where you live and deal with your family and operate your businesses and worship. And so Yitzhak does exactly that. His servants apparently identify another one of the plugged up wells, a caved in water reservoir system. And so they dig that out, and it's the same well system that Abraham had dug out many years earlier. And that's when Abimelech shows up. Now, I don't believe this is the same Abimelech of Abraham's day. I think Abimelech is a title for the king of the Gerar water system. And so this guy might be the son or the grandson of Abraham's Abimelech. So when Abimelech went to him from Gerar, that'd be Gerar city, with Ahuzath, his advisor, and Phicol, the commander of his army, and I also believe that Phicol, I think it has something to do with big voice, I think that's also a title of whoever the commander of the military of this particular country is. So the bigwigs of Gerar city and of the Gerar watershed community, they come for a visit. Verse 27, Yitzhak said to him, why have you come to me, seeing that you hate me and have sent me away from you? So in his mind, having been told, go away, that was a big negative. That he felt that Abimelech and Phicol did not want to be friends. They didn't want to be hospitable neighbors. That they wanted him out, far up the watershed. So he complied, and he had to fight and argue with some of Abimelech's servants on the way. But now he's finally found a place where he thinks he can call it his own because God has spoken to him here. So he's a little bit frustrated about the relationship. And their response was this: we see plainly that he who is has been with you. So we said, let there be a sworn pact between us, between you and us, and let us make a covenant with you that you will do us no harm, just as we have not touched you and have not done and have done to you nothing but good and have sent you away in peace. You are now the blessed of he who is. So there's an acknowledgement here by Abimelech and Phicol and Ahuzmeth that there's something special in Yitzhak's life. There's something special about the way that the God of the universe blesses him, takes good care of him, gives him great crops whenever he tries to grow crops, gives him great animal output whenever he's taking care of his animals, helps him when he digs wells to hit water at the appropriate level and all that. So God is clearly on his side, and these guys want in on that blessing that spreads out on anyone that he has a good relationship with. This is actually part of the Abrahamic blessing, remember. God had said to Abraham, I will bless those who bless you and curse those who curse you. So Abimelech wants on the blessing side of that equation and makes the offer of entering into a mutual non-aggression pact. And Yitzhak agrees, verse 30. So he made them a feast. They ate and they drank. That's the way you always sealed the deal, is you had a meal together. And in the morning, they rose up early and they exchanged oaths. So they make promises to one another in the name of He Who Is. And then Yitzhak set them on their way and they departed from him in peace. And it was that same day that Yitzhak's servants came and told him about the well that they had dug and said to him, "We have found water." So it just so happens the same day that they enter into this oath of mutual non-aggression, that the old well at Beersheba was fully opened up and they found the water level down below. And so his servants come and report that this water system has been renewed, that it's been reopened, and he called it Sheba. And therefore, the name of the city is Beersheba to this day. Now, Sheva, remember, is the word for seven. It's also the word for oath. And so that's why this place gets called the Well of the Oath. Because in Yitzhak's mind, he entered into an oath of mutual non-aggression with the Gerarites on this particular day when this well was opened back up. So you effectively have two times that this little site where this well has been dug, first by Abraham and then reopened by Yitzhak's men, this site is the site of a double oath, an oath made in Abraham's day and now an oath made in Yitzhak's day. And it was probably at some point shortly hereafter that permanent houses started being built near this well. And instead of being just a little watering place for Bedouin tribes moving around and little tent cities moving around like Yitzhak's tent city, it has now become the most significant permanent settlement in the northern Sinai or the southern Canaan region. And eventually, the Israelis will talk about the breadth of their land by saying, from Dan in the north, and that's north of the Dead Sea, Sea of Galilee, all the way to Beersheba in the south. That's the breadth, that's the length of the Holy Land. And so here is the true beginnings of that permanent city. Verse number 34, we have something that we can put a date to, because we know when Esau and Jacob were born. And so here it says, when Esau was 40 years old, he took Judith, the daughter of Biri the Hittite, to be his wife, and Basmath, the daughter of Elon the Hittite. So when he turns 40, which would be in the year 1976 BC, and if you're interested in my chronology work, then I would recommend checking out my chronological companion to the Bible. It's on the website, intotheword2020.com. And toward the front of this work, you will find my key anchor dates for the chronology of the Old Testament. And that includes the birth of Abraham. And then, we know Abraham was 100 when his son Yitzhak was born. And we know Yitzhak was 60 when his twin boys were born. And therefore, we know the date here when one of those twins hits 40. Now, the mention here of these two marriages is important to the later story. Esau is not marrying back into his own family. He is marrying native girls from Canaan, Hittites. And more than likely, there's going to be some confusion about faith here, because the Hittite people had their own gods and goddesses. And so they get married, and that starts causing trouble in the family. Verse 35, they made life bitter for Yitzhak and Rebekah. Now, I think there's two particular areas that this trouble could be arising from. The number one thing is perhaps just personality problems, that Mother Rebekah did not like her new daughters-in-law. Maybe she didn't like their attitudes or their lifestyles. But the bigger issue, I think, is that these guys are going to start immediately having a family. And so Rebekah and Yitzhak's grandkids through Esau are going to be raised by these women that have come out of pagan backgrounds, and which Rebekah and Yitzhak apparently don't get along with. And so it's always a big problem when your grandkids are raised by people you don't really approve of. And so that then brings us to a few years later, that Yitzhak is getting older. Now, he's not going to die until he's about 180. So we're still a long ways from that. But this is in the year 1939 BC, and Yitzhak is about 137. So he is feeling his age at this point. And this is what we're told. Chapter 27, verse 1, when Yitzhak was old and his eyes were dim so that he could not see, so he's probably being affected by cataracts, he called Esau his older son and said to him, "My son?" And he answered, "Here I am." And he said, "Behold, I'm old, and I don't know the day of my death. Now then, take your weapons, your quiver, your bow, go out into the field, hunt game for me, prepare for me delicious food, such as I love, and bring it to me so that I may eat, that my soul may bless you before I die." So Yitzhak is feeling old and possibly near his death. Now, it's not, but he feels like it is. And so he has a very special relationship with the oldest of his two twins. Remember that he and his son Esau are men of the field. They enjoyed hunting together. And Yitzhak is very fond of tasty, wild game. And so now that he feels like he's very close to the end of his life, he'd like one last good meal of game. And then he wants to go through the official blessing ceremony on his heir and his firstborn that is going to carry forward the blessing of Abraham. Remember the blessing of, through your seed, Abraham, all the nations of the earth are going to be blessed. This countryside is going to become filled with your descendants, that sort of thing. Now, you may remember that many years earlier, Esau had actually sold this birthright to his younger twin, only a matter of minutes, so it's not that big of a deal, for a bowl of red lentil soup. And apparently, Esau has moved forward from that, really not thinking all that much about it. And so when his dad is offering to bless him over one last meal, he jumps up and heads out to do what dad wants, Verse 3, "Now then, take your weapons, your quiver, your bow, go out into the field, hunt the game for me, prepare the delicious food such as I love, bring it to me so that I may eat, that my soul may bless you before I die." Now Rebekah was listening when Yitzhak spoke to his son Esau. So when Esau went to the field to hunt for game and to bring it, Rebekah said to her son Jacob, "I heard your father speak to your brother Esau. Bring me game and prepare for me delicious food that I may eat it and bless you before he who is, before I die. Now therefore, my son, obey my voice as I command you." So Rebekah finds out that the blessing ceremony is about to happen. She is apparently well aware that her favored son, Jacob, is the one that should be receiving this blessing because the boys made an agreement. And she decides to intervene. And we know from past stories that when you try to step in and help God out on something, you oftentimes confuse it and make more problems. She had been told in a prophecy that her younger son was going to become the senior to the older son. Remember that? So she wants to help God out, but she chooses to do it through trickery. And she's going to make use of Jacob to get this trickery carried out. And again, you should remember that Jacob's name, as a euphemism or as a symbolic name, means leg puller or a person that tricks you. And so Jacob is actually going to be involved in tricking his father. But it's his mom that's really, really pushing this issue. And we should take note of that as we continue with the story. But we can't do that until tomorrow because we're out of time for today. So may the Lord bless you. And I'll see you next time we get into God's Word.